everybody. Hello. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, and I'm back. I missed a week, and I always miss you whenever I miss a week. So I'm very happy to be here to talk about my favorite subject, food. I'm actually in the Bay Area, sunny California, for a while, doing some work, some projects here. And enjoying it very much, I must say. I think this is the best time of year to be here. It's not too hot, not too anything, just too beautiful. So I'm feeling very, very grateful. Shall we think of some of the things we're grateful for? I am grateful to be here right now. And I love to swim, and I'm having an opportunity to do a lot of that. That's really a wonderful exercise. And speaking of swimming, let's just get right down to water and those species that swim in the ocean, shall we? We've been talking about fish and the oceans, the state of the oceans. When I spoke with the founder of Fish Feel a few weeks ago, Mary Finelli, and I'm going to be bringing on next week a guest, Jonathan Balcombe, who has a new book out, and that book is about fish too, and it's called What a Fish Knows. So while we're talking about all of these things about fish, the subject of eating fish comes up, something that I have not done for about 30 years now. The health professionals, many of them encourage us to eat more and more fish, even though our oceans are polluted and the supply of fish is depleted. So that's why I'm really excited today to bring on my guest from Sophie's Kitchen, Vegan Seafood. I've mentioned them before on the program, and now we're going to be talking direct to Eugene Wang and Susan Karskinon. Are you with me today?
Hi, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here. Nice talking to you all. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And is Susan with us too?
Thank you.
Is
Well, I
Susan
guess.
here? Okay, well, we'll see about Susan in a little bit. Not yet, I've been told. Okay, cool. So, Eugene,
Yes.
you've been involved in the vegetarian food business. I'm reading from your bio for a very long time. Let's just jump right in and give us a brief introduction about how Sophie's Kitchen came about.
Yes, indeed. My family has been involved in vegetarian manufacturing for over 30 years. And along the way, I see all my families are eating vegetarian food thanks to their religious belief, which is Buddhism. And so, you know, a lot of my family members are vegetarian by their religious belief. And down the row, right after I had my first newborn, my baby, that was seven. Well, that was almost 8 years ago when she was Sophie. When she was almost 2 year old, I just found out that she has this very severe allergic reaction to some of the shellfish, and then that gave me some of the ideas that, you know, along the way, I had quite a few friends who had similar symptoms, and I had a lot of friends and family, and even people around me who are vegetarian or even vegans, who are indeed still, you know, thinking about seafood. And so I thought, you know, why not use our technology to come up with something to help people, you know, to live on their choice of plant-based diet. And that's how Sophie's Kitchen was born.
Well, it's beautiful. You know, it's amazing. I don't encourage things that are unfortunate to happen, but sometimes, oftentimes, we really get creative when something bad happens, and then we create something that's so wonderful. So I can't imagine what it was like when your daughter had an allergic reaction. Just seeing
Yeah.
small children suffer in any way is probably the worst thing we could ever see.
Definitely, definitely. You know, we were this close to send her to the hospital. And, you know, I have some of the problems myself with seafood too. So, you know, I know all too well how that felt. And, but, you know, like you said, you know, at the end of the day, It's a kind of fortunate thing on the other hand, when you look at it from the other perspective, that I got this inspiration to create something to help people in the world to live in a better life. So I think it's probably a blessing in itself also.
Yeah. Now, shellfish, I know people have had problems with shellfish for a long time. They are bottom feeders. They tend to like to eat the garbagey things. I'm wondering if shellfish is more of a problem today because our oceans are so toxic.
You know, yes and no. I think shellfish itself, because of the gene, because of the protein it provides, it has a lot of it gives a lot of a problem to a lot of people who eat it. But then again, today the world, the ocean is really so polluted that people aren't aware of, you know, that pretty much a lot of the fishes are really in danger.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. There's a research coming out from Japan. They actually studied the fishes in Tokyo Bay. And what they found out alarmingly is that a lot of the fish in their meat, you can find probably some particles of plastics in their in their flesh, meaning that these fishes are actually accidentally eating the plastic that we dump into the ocean by accident. And so that's just
I'm sorry. I was just thinking of I have these fleece jackets. And they're synthetic fleece. And I was reading that just by washing them in the washing machine and the particulates, these nanoparticulates, go out into the water supply and get into the ocean and into the sea life, as you were saying.
Right. You know, so I think the key here is that, you know, what happened on the land is very easy for people to measure and to be aware of and to understand the degree of pollution or damage that we have done. What happens in the water in the ocean is really problematic, you know, because a lot of time, very often what happens is that people just don't see. They can't see it. They can't understand it. They can't even measure it. So there's a huge debate about just how much the ocean fishery has been depleted by our greed. You know, a lot of the experts, a lot of the people have different numbers. And these numbers, a lot of times, are just giving us a very contradictory and very puzzling picture. But in any case, I think what the urgency here is that we have to understand just because we don't know doesn't mean that there's no problem. And we really have to be aware and even, you know, taking some actions to help prevent things, bad things from happening before it's too late.
Yes, before it's too late for Sophie.
Yep, indeed. And our future generations to come, you know, not just for our current generations like Sophie, yeah. You know, we got to think about, like there's a number, you know, probably by 2050, the world is going to fill up with 9 billion people. Think about it, you know, how much people, how much protein you have to feed these people. And can we be sustainable with just the land animal or even the animals from the ocean? I don't think so. And that's why we are acting in any possible way to help the world solve this issue.
All right, so let's talk about the delicious seafood, the vegan seafood that you've created, and this one special ingredient that you use, the konjac.
Yes, konjac, some people call it Japanese yam because it was perfected by the Japanese for hundreds of years. Now, if you went to a Japanese restaurant, you must have these little noodle-like or even patty, tofu patty-like food that's made out of konjac, Japanese yam root, and you were simply not aware of. And what we found out is that through our technology, our patent pending technology, we can actually use this konjac yam root and to perfectly simulate the texture of a lot of the shell shrimp, shellfish. And that's why we use it in our foods. And together with the pea protein, it gives our foods a very perfect balance between the protein and fiber counts. So that's the beauty of this never heard of yam root in this market.
This is Susan here.
Hi, Susan. Welcome to It's All About Food, and thanks for joining us. You're the marketing with Sophie's Kitchen, right?
Yes, and that's the it's so interesting. And one of the things about konjac that we have found out that's so fascinating is that there's a brain connection. Eugene has been able to recreate an incredible mouthfeel of seafood using konjac. And what's so fascinating is that because of that brain-body connection, people really get the satisfaction of real seafood when they're, you know, eating Sophie's Kitchen products. It's fascinating to us. And it was a whole genre of science that we didn't really think about, even though Eugene was trying to perfect that mouthfeel. So now we're just overjoyed when we, you know, when we're around consumers and they say, oh, my goodness, this is just like seafood. It's a real, real feather in our cap. And it's a fascinating aspect to all of this.
Absolutely. Now, I'm familiar, since I've been vegan for a long time, seeking out all kinds of crazy vegan foods, I'm familiar with a handful of other companies that make different kinds of vegan seafood. Mewa in New York is an example. And it's been fun to buy some of their products. And I think they come from Taiwan. But I have never, until I tried your vegan salmon, ever had anything like that. The salmon is just crazy.
Thank you, Grace.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And have you tried the crab cake?
I grew up in a Jewish family. I'm not religious, but we definitely like the traditional foods. And a bagel, cream cheese, and lox is something that a lot of people can't do without. And I don't think anybody would know the difference with your product.
So, Karen, here's the difference between our way of promoting our food than the competition is that, you know, number one, we're definitely designed for this market. Mewa, like the company you mentioned, their products are mostly designed in Asia, designed for Asian markets, which a lot of time they have a lot of ingredients that we here in North America don't really understand or feel well about it. Things like sugar and even some synthetic flavoring or coloring, you know, and those ingredients are you won't see it in our foods. And not just that, we're kosher certified, we're non-GMO project verified, we've got numerous certifications just to make sure that customers here really understand our philosophy, our core belief in this brand in making these foods. And we hope that people will not just enjoy it, but also feel healthy, eat healthily with our foods.
Well, that's really an important point because, unfortunately, there are a lot of vegan products that are trying to simulate animal foods. And especially the earlier ones that have come out are filled with all kinds of synthetic ingredients and salt, sugar, and fats that aren't healthy for us, and you read the package label and you don't know what's in it. So a healthier, cleaner product is really important.
Definitely, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had heard about your products but hadn't had an opportunity to try them until I went to the Food Bites conference in Brooklyn, and that's where I met you and got to sample some of your products. And the Food Bite event is interesting, where they're making an opportunity for more food companies to make people aware of their products. And they sound like they're very forward-thinking in terms of the companies they want to promote. I just found that there was Well, for example, there was a company promoting a wild seafood product, and they used the slogan sustainable seafood, which I think is an oxymoron because it's not sustainable in any way that you might do it wild or not.
Right.
Yeah, but yours
is. I think people in general are still confusing about what is really cutting edge, what is really visionary in our food supply. And I mean the whole industry, even the whole nation is actually seeking the answer. And I think it's going to be a long way down the road before we truly find out what's really the answer. And there are only a few very visionary groups or people who can foresee that. So I think events like Food Bites is really a good broadcasting or educating event for us to help deliver our message to the mass. Is that, you know, just like you said, it's really hard to fish sustainably out of the ocean or even out of any water. I mean, because you really don't have a way to measure it. So instead of keep thinking about what we should do with our fishery, with our fishing industry, why not just create a whole new alternative category that helps people to stay away or to eat less of these seafoods? And in that way, even though we can't really convince the whole world not to eat fish, but then again, at the end of the day, in the future, we probably can cut the consumption of fishery quite a bit and help solve the problem we're foreseeing that's coming in the future. That's what we think that we want to do and we should do.
Now, let's get back to your production. I really appreciate that you're sensitive to the ingredients you're using and making them more healthful, environmentally friendly product. Where does your konjac come from? Is it grown in the United States? Do you import it from Asia?
Yeah, we import it. We actually have a lot of our foods made in Asia right now because, number one, we're bootstrapping startups. It, you know, as you can imagine, it took a lot of money to set up a facility right here. But we're in the process of trying to shifting our manufacturing facility operations over as we speak. Actually, just recently, we had a new co-packer in Toronto. And we're going to foresee more percentage of our production going to be shipped over. And the konjac root currently is sourced out of China. Before the 2011 earthquake, we actually sourced it out of Japan. But just unfortunately, the konjac root was grown around the Fukushima power plant area. And so we were forced to switch to another supplier. And so that's why we have to source up from China. But then, you know, like you said, you know, definitely in the future, it, just so that people don't understand the konjac root, so our business is still very small. But when we grow, we definitely would think about sourcing or even growing the konjac and everything right here in the States or even Canada to help cut down our cost and make it more sustainable, and
yes,
which will definitely match our business philosophy.
It is very difficult to start any food business, and I appreciate you saying that. And I know that you have to make some compromises sometimes in terms of where you're getting your supplies, just because it's a very difficult thing to do, and you've come a long way. So, can konjac be grown in the United States or in Canada?
Definitely. I just can't find a farmer or a farm willing to do that for me. Because
okay,
of,
so we
number
have to put
one,
that out there. Anybody that wants to grow konjac, here is an opportunity for you.
Right. And actually, believe it or not, konjac is actually used in a lot of different industry, especially in supplements. And they call it glucomen. And so it's a huge business, actually, believe it or not. It's just that.
Yeah.
It's just that that's so weird that here the farming industry here doesn't really understand or even heard of such plants. So that's why we had a real difficulty sourcing it from here.
Yeah, well, that looks like a great opportunity, unless it's difficult to grow.
Not at all. Not at all. It's a root. So, right. You know, I suppose it's just like potato, you know.
Right. Okay, everybody, start growing cayenne. It's an amazing
terrific
root.
In Asia. So it's an ancient staple, really. It's low in calories and high in fiber. So, you know, that's what everybody in America is looking for. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I briefly mentioned your salmon, which is just amazing, scary amazing. It was the first thing that I saw when I walked into Food Bites was your table, not your table where you were standing, but there was a display with the salmon. And I was looking at it, and I thought it was vegan, but it just looked so real that I couldn't believe it, and I had to read everything that was there before I would try it, because it looked like salmon. Now, I don't even know how you do it, but it's just pretty incredible.
Yes, you know, because the first thing I thought of when I was starting this business is lox. Because, you know, just recently that people probably become aware of the genetically modified salmon that's going to be marketed in the United States pretty soon. And salmon is such a huge business that, believe it or not, it's actually, to some extent, is polluting our ocean thanks to these congregated farms, and it's a multi-billion-dollar business. No one really dares to challenge it. But I think if we're making a vegan seafood, we better be the first one to fire the shot and come up with something that's really helping people to cut down their consumption on salmon. And plus, these smoked salmon taste really good and has a lot of fiber and enough decent protein that you really shouldn't miss the opportunity to try some. And I believe it could be available in a lot of the natural food stores just near you. So hopefully people would get a chance to try it.
Now let's talk about shrimp, because shrimp has a big story behind it from a health point of view, from an environmental point of view. It is loaded with cholesterol. It is not a healthy food to eat. Of course, many people are allergic to it. The shrimp farms today are a disaster for the environment, destroying coral reefs. And I keep thinking, I haven't been in one in a long time, but I remember younger going to these restaurants that had unlimited cocktail shrimp and these shrimp bars, and you know, we would just eat so many of them, and they are still going on today. But real shrimp is a terrible thing for people to consume on so many levels. So you have come up with a vegan shrimp.
That's totally the point. You know, when we look at the whole market research numbers, shrimp is actually, by far, I believe it's the number one consumed item among all the seafood. And like you said, you know, shrimp farms actually gave the whole world a lot of problems, not just because the pollutions they created. They use a lot of chemicals to keep the shrimps healthy and alive. And not just that, a lot of the companies use slave labor to peel the shrimp, to process the shrimp. And that create a lot more problems. And so just by over-consuming or over-depending on one item, the whole world is creating such a mess to the globe, to the earth. And I think really, you know, there should be a company, a major company, coming out and do something about it. It's just so unfortunate that none of these multinational food companies really see this. But I believe what we are trying to do here definitely will be noticed by these big companies, big guys, and hopefully they will join the parade and come up with something to help people to stay away from the shrimp consumption. And like you said, you know, shrimp itself has a lot of cholesterol. For people who are in their mid-age, mid-40 or even elder, I would say the you know, try not to eat too much shrimp in your daily diet, and eat our vegan shrimp is probably a better option for all of you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Susan.
I'm sorry. That brings up a really important point. We have also learned that a lot of our fans are not necessarily all vegan. They are just looking for more plant-based foods to add to their diet. So it's an amazing thing to be able to augment perhaps your half-vegan diet or just adding more plant foods to your diet. Our foods make it really easy. So let's say you do have shrimp once in a while, but you still want to enjoy shrimp that's plant-based, then voila, Sophie's Kitchen's whole line of products.
That's a really good point, because the pendulum has swung really way too far in terms of the animal products we consume today, and we need to swing it back. Whether people become vegan, which, you know, I would love personally, but I don't think that's going to happen. People need to consume more plants and less animals if we're going to continue on this planet. And this is definitely a way to do it.
Speaking of which, you know, the whole nation is actually, you know, 40% of the whole nation is actually staying away from real meat or seafood right now as we speak. And so just like the other day, I got an email from one of our consumers. She mentioned a very interesting story about she just mixed our vegan shrimp with the real shrimp to, number one, cut down the cholesterol that she took in that meal, and also, you know, try as a way for her to try to convince her to get onto a more plant-based diet. This is a very wonderful story, as you can see what people here in this country are trying to do to stay away from animal protein.
Right, that's clever. Very clever.
Yeah. Really?
Good.
Yeah.
The thing I like about your shrimp is I remember a long time ago when I ate shrimp, occasionally I'd get a piece of the shell that wasn't peeled off, and it would be pointy or crunchy, but there's no shell in your products.
Yeah.
definitely, yeah. So eating our shrimp is not just healthy, but also a wonderful joy.
Right. Okay, now we can find your product online and in stores. Is that correct?
That's correct. Online, there's a few vegan stores that you can check out, or go to our website. There's a link to these stores. And in a lot of the natural food stores, like Whole Foods Market, like Mother's, and Moms, you know, a lot of these natural food stores carry our products too. So just feel free to go to these natural food stores. If not, just contact us through our website, and we'll give you the direction.
Okay.
Also,
yes,
our products are available across North America in almost every natural food store. So even if, for instance, our vegan tuna is in the aisle with real tuna, our frozen products are in the frozen aisle. But any store can order our products. So it's as simple as a consumer going into their favorite natural food store and asking for it. We're also in a lot of Safeways across the country. So we're very pretty available.
I didn't realize that your tuna is in the same area as animal fish tuna. That's
right.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, it's just so unfortunate that the buyer, the retail store, they don't really have a space for this type of product. Think about it, you know, go figure. So, you know, we're probably really the first one and very innovative, probably too innovative to a lot of these retail stores. But I believe, down the road, you know, consumers' buying choice will tell these buyers that, retail buyers that, you know, we really have to catch up with consumer demands in terms of alternative protein, especially plant-based protein. And so that, you know, these plant-based products will be more visible in anywhere in the supermarket.
That sounds good to me. Well, Eugene and Susan of Sophie's Kitchen Vegan Seafood, thanks so much for joining me and for doing what you're doing. Now we just have to grow more konjac in the United States.
Thank you very much, Karen. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Take care.
Bye.
Both of you.
Thank
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Eugene Wang of Sophie's Kitchen Vegan Seafood. This is really a beautiful thing. And I tell you, I've tried some of these products and they're good. Now, I have to admit, I never really liked smoked salmon. I was talking earlier about the smoked salmon on bagels with cream cheese back in the day when I ate those things. And when I tried their vegan salmon, it really tasted like it, but let me just, I don't know how else to put it. I liked it, whereas I didn't like the original version, and I can't really explain what the difference is unless subconsciously or consciously, as I'm going to go into the next topic, maybe I knew what the original product was, and that's why I didn't like eating whoever it was. All right, let's talk more about being conscious about what we do, shall we? And I want to invite my next guest, which is Michael Neely, and he's putting together the Conscious Life Summit coming up very soon. I'm actually in it, and we're going to learn more about that and about Michael right now. Michael, welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, we're not necessarily going to talk about food, or maybe we will in this segment, but there's a lot of things that are connected to food that we talk about on this program, and one of them is how people tend to sleepwalk through their lives, not paying attention to food and to other things. And one of the things that I've found with my diet and lifestyle is it has enabled me to be more aware, more conscious, and I think I'm enjoying my life all the more as a result. So let's talk about you and your podcast and your summit and this whole consciousness.
Yeah. Well, gosh, you know, my consciousness really started many years back just trying to wake up more to how I am as a human being, you know, why I do the things I do, and not just me but everybody. And then ultimately, a little over a year ago, I started my podcast, Consciously Speaking, because I felt like it was important information that everybody needed to really learn to just wake up, go, you know, turn off the autopilot and bring more real awareness to everything that's going on in their lives. And just to keep a longer story short, just out of this has evolved the Conscious Life Summit. Which kind of the difference between the two is my podcast is interviews where I'll bring on guests like yourself who are making a conscious impact in the world and talk to them about their background, how they've traveled along their path of awakening and what, you know, their story is. And the difference in the summit is that I want that to be more of an opportunity for them to really teach. So the people who are tuning into the summit, they get, instead of hearing just all the backstory, they get to really walk away with some wonderful takeaways about waking up. And in your case, you know, I was very happy to wake up people to the world of food and taking care of ourselves the way we eat and our planet.
I mentioned to you in an email recently that my partner Gary and I are in California, and we're here probably for another month or two. I'm not quite sure. It's kind of exciting to be open-ended about what we're doing.
That's nice.
And I've lived here in California. I'm familiar with the lifestyle here. I've visited many times, but you know, we do live in New York City, and it's very different there. And what we do in our home, I think, is very different than what most people do in their homes. And as we're visiting people and just seeing other people's lifestyles a little bit more, it's difficult because I'm seeing things that I'm aware of that I know other people aren't aware of. And
yeah.
It's, I can only control myself and I don't want to judge. and restraint is a difficult thing. How do we manage that as conscious seeking folks when we're with people who aren't as I don't want to use the word enlightened, but maybe I could use the word enlightened.
You know, it's really a wonderful and interesting question coming from you, because strangely enough, as I was scripting my podcast episode that's going to air, I believe I'm going to post it on Thursday as a kickoff to the summit, one of the things that I say about you is that you're very good at being a kind of a subtle guide and living by example. And I think that's one of the great things that we can use to expand consciousness, is to show other people, let them see the way that we live, and give them gentle nudges and guidance, as opposed to trying to preach, because nobody, you know, likes to be preached to. But if we kind of gently open their eyes, I think that is a good way to wake up the world. And that's part of why I created the podcast as well, is, you know, give people a little taste of it, and then they can see, oh, that, kind of like a buffet, you know, they see that, oh, that looks good, let me try that.
Yeah, well, it's difficult. I appreciate you saying what you've said about me. I want you to know it's not the easiest thing. For a number of reasons, because we all see how the world is today and the problems that we have on this planet. We have environmental problems. We have violence and refugees and exploitation. There's just so many problems on the planet today. And when you see things that you know don't have to be, and that could be easily changed just by a shift or something, and you know the dire situation the planet's in, you just want to be able to just let it all out and kind of like shake people. Don't you realize if you just do this, how much easier it would be? But we can't do that, can we?
No, you know, we can't, but it does make you want to do something. And it's so interesting that you bring up some of these other things. My particular episode for the summit, I talk about racism. And I'm not talking about it as like that's my topic that I'm here to fight in the world, but I use it as an example of one of the things that I believe we need to work on as a society. And the whole premise, though, behind that, aside from that being the topic, is that as a culture, we need to approach it the same way we do ourselves. So in other words, for me to change the way that I approach food and nutrition, I need to change my belief system. Look at what stories I have around that that have made me believe a certain thing that may not be true, most likely isn't. And similarly with society, we need to stop hanging on to old false beliefs, create a new paradigm, and make the shift from within. And societally, I think the one way to change that is to, you know, whoever controls the media controls the story. And the media just keeps feeding the same old stories, and I think we need to change the story. And I think that is one way that we can approach everything, taking care of the planet, taking care of some of these world challenges that you mentioned.
Well, and that's why the internet is so great, because it's open to everyone to share information. It's not just closed to television and those who can get access to being on a mainstream news program.
Yeah,
but it's the ego. It's our ego that is comfortable in an identity that we've grown up with, and continually tries to bring us back to it, what the ego thinks we are. But we can change that.
We certainly can, and it starts with the belief. And one of the examples that I like to use is the fact that, you know, just over 500 years ago, we all believed that the world was flat. You know, and literally, and we would find proof in things that weren't necessarily proof. But if some ship went off sailing out into the sunset, no sight of land, if they never came back, well, there's your proof that the world was flat. They sailed off the end. And if they did come back, but they never spotted land, well, there's your proof. Neither of which was true, of course, but it supported this false belief that we didn't know was false. And so similarly, we still have beliefs in place that are they're just crazy.
Yeah.
And we need to start to take away, you know, the background, remove the fiction from the story and stick to the facts. And, you know, I think we can use that to tackle all of our issues. And I'm not saying it's easy, of course, but I love that you mentioned independent radio, independent podcast, the internet. These are the ways that we're going to do this.
Absolutely. And not be afraid to say what needs to be said because our sponsors don't want us to say certain things.
Right.
Yeah, this is real freedom. Now, tell me, the Conscious Life Summit, I'm going to be tuning in because I'm a part of it, but I'm also looking forward to all the other people that are involved. What are we going to learn about at the Conscious Life Summit?
Well, one of the things, the reason that I also liked creating this summit and call it the Conscious Life Summit as opposed to any one particular topic but about a conscious life is that many people will focus in one area and really develop their awareness in it, let's say. And so for myself, I grew up, I learned about conscious relationships was probably one of the first areas of consciousness that I developed. But then my child was born and I started to learn about conscious parenting. And there's still so many other aspects of waking up. And we tend to, I think, kind of pick and choose. And for the Conscious Life Summit, what I did was I brought in experts from 12 different areas of conscious living so that someone could really get a feel across the board of like, oh, you know what? I can be awake in every part of my life. And here's some great tips and wisdom on how to. And so that's what it's all founded on.
Okay, so I know I was talking about food, and what are some of the other topics that some of the experts are going to be discussing?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So I have an expert on conscious sexuality. How can we wake up to our sexual feelings and get beyond certain taboos and improve our sex lives? And then there's conscious parenting. I have some wonderful experts that, you know, show us some ways to be more effective as a parent and to forgive ourselves for the mistakes we make along the way, and forgiving our own parents too, of course. And then I've got experts in business and experts in marketing. I've even got a love-based marketing experts who, one of the values I find in that as well is even if someone's not a marketer, they're not going to go out and start writing their own copy. But I think it's great to have her on the show because it also wakes us up to start to realize, oh, wait a minute, they're using these ploys to sell me something, and I don't like it that they're not doing it in love-based, they're doing it in fear-based. And so we can also start to become aware of that. So let's see, what are some of the other things? And we have just basic conscious lifestyle, what it is to put things into place throughout your day, being on purpose. What is it to live a life that's filled with purpose? What are some of the others? Gosh, conscious leadership, not just in corporations and businesses, but also how we are leaders in our communities and in our own lives, and how we can live by example. So 12 topics altogether, and it's just going to be wonderful.
It's challenging to be awake and to be conscious because we see lots of things going on, things that we cannot change overnight, things that are painful. And to live a conscious life takes constant energy and focus. But I think at the end of the day, you can sleep peacefully with integrity, knowing that you have made your own choices without concern of outside opinion. And hopefully I would like to think that those conscious choices are for the good of yourself and for everyone around you.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head there, Karen. It really is, you know, the way to approach it. And I think if you really are conscious, I think there's no other way than for the choices you make to be good for the whole of humanity and for the planet.
Now, I mean, you came out of this because you're a student of Buddhism. So do they teach this sort of thing in Buddhism? Being present, being conscious?
Well, yeah, definitely the being present
part is a big aspect of Buddhism, that you learn to just be in the present moment, that, you know, the past is gone, the future isn't here, there really is only the now. And so that is certainly a practice of it. Where I think it's the consciousness that I speak of is a little bit different, is that it then starts to evolve into, you know, making choices and bringing awareness into other stuff, which, yes, it is still related. And then within Buddhism, of course, there's things such as right speech and right livelihood. And so there's a lot of interconnectedness. And at the same time, I don't feel like it requires what I'm talking about with people waking up. I don't think requires there to be any element of Buddhism attached to it.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Now, you've got a book coming out soon. When is it coming out? And what is the meaning of The Art of Forgetting, the title?
Well, yeah, it's I keep putting it off because I have so many other projects that keep coming up on my plate, but my hope is that by November that I will have that book out. Yeah, you know how that goes, huh?
I know.
And the way the book evolved was I was in the pharmaceutical industry for a while, and I learned about an interesting process known as a double-blind study. And in the double-blind study, the physician, when they're testing a drug, the physician's not allowed to know whether or not he's giving the patient a placebo or the real drug. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, well, why is that? The physician isn't taking the drug, but studies prove time and again that it would have an impact on the outcome of the patient. And that kind of blew me away when I first heard that. I'm like, really? So his expectations, the doctor's expectations, had an impact on whether or not you were going to get better. So if they believed you'd get better, you'd have an improved chance of getting better. And the more I looked at this, I realized we do this in life, in that, and as an example, we may all feel this. We go home to be with our parents for the holidays or something, and we notice that we show up a certain way. And part of that is because an expectation has been built for us to show up that way. Or even among our friends. Maybe your friends expect, you know, I'm always the funny guy. I'm the one always cracking jokes. And so they expect me to show up that way. And if I ever do show up being a little more somber and down, they're like, what's going on with Michael? And so when I started to tap into that, I realized, oh, wait a minute. So if we have these expectations, we are impacting the way things show up in our world. How can we change that? And the way to do that is to let go of these expectations and forget what we think we already know. And therefore, it's why it's called The Art of Forgetting, is that it's a practice in approaching every moment fresh. So let's even say with your partner, ideally, you would be able to roll over, see them in bed in the morning, and look at them and say, do I know you? And really, you know, really mean it and get to know them new every day. And when you do that, it allows them to show up with fresh vitality and possibility, instead of, you know, you have these expectations that they're going to be grumpy or they're going to this or they're going to that, that you then help to fulfill that prophecy. And so The Art of Forgetting is about letting go of all that.
You need to finish this book.
Yes, I do. I know.
You need to. But I know exactly what you're going through. I've been working on a book now for 10 years, and I promised myself it's going to be finished by the end of this year.
Yay, woohoo. We can form a support group.
But this thing that you talked about, the double-blind study, I'm very familiar with studies like that, and I understand the purpose of it, but I you just gave me chills when you were just talking about how not just in a controlled experiment, but how doctors can definitely influence your outcome by his or her beliefs. And I know that with my own experience, because I, 10 years ago, went through advanced ovarian cancer, and I went with my gut and my intuition in terms of the doctors that I wanted to work with to help me get well. And some of the doctors I consulted with were scary, and I knew that I would die if I was treated by some of them, because they didn't have that same... I wanted a doctor, actually one of the doctors who was my surgeon, when we walked in, he basically said that I'm this healthy woman and he's going to, you know, take care of me. And that's the kind of guy I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was lucky. I made some good choices, but the people around us can determine our outcomes if we let them.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of, you know, mentioning physicians in that respect, I think it's one of the worst things that they can do is when they have a prognosis and they give it to a patient almost like it's set in stone, like it's a sentence, like a doctor saying, you've only got 2 months to live or anything like that. I think that's crazy to do that.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's...
You know, because what happened?
Yes, please.
I was just going to say, because then what happens is we take it on in our belief system. We might. I mean, not all of us, thank goodness you didn't. But we can, and we have a tendency to, take that on as a belief system, and then we manifest it. We create it. We are masters at manifesting our beliefs.
Well, you mentioned also earlier about the media and how they promote fear.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a part of it, too. The medical establishment or some medical practitioners can create fear for you if you allow it to happen, in terms of insisting tests or diagnosis that you need. There's a whole gamut of what some will do as opposed to what others will do that are empowering and inspiring versus inflicting fear.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode probably just on our health and medical system here in the United States, but it's
you've studied meditation as well. And I'm not an expert in meditation, but meditation was what resolved my fear.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Before, in my treatment and healing with my cancer experience, meditation was like a lifeline in terms of resolving fear. And you can't function if you're petrified.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to the Conscious Life Summit. We have a few more minutes, and I just want to focus on that and how people can get involved with it. So I have some links on my website, responsibilityandliving.com, where you can find out more about it. And the website itself for the summit is what?
Well, you know what? Let's give your listeners a specific link so we'll know that they heard of it on your show. So if you want to tune into the Conscious Life Summit, go to consciouslifesummit.com/REAL. So it's consciouslifesummit.com/real, REAL. And that'll take you to the page where you can get hooked up. You can see all the guests there, and it's totally free. So I invite everybody to come and check it out.
Okay, thank you very much. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Okay, I'm really looking forward to that. Now, just one last thing about this summit is, like many other online summits, you can listen to everyone for free. And then there is an option, right, for people where they can buy a package if they can't attend everything or hear everything afterwards.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And the package will be available. And once you sign up, you'll be taken to a page where that package is available. And the package is really incredible. You're going to get all of the summits recorded and stored. So you'll actually be able to download them, take them, share them, do whatever you want with those. And then also a ton of great bonuses, including...
Ta-da-ba-da.
Karen, I'll let you share about your bonus. Yes.
Yes, and I am offering a free consultation in my coaching practice for anyone who wants some fast, good advice and find out more about coaching with me.
Absolutely, which is a wonderful, very generous bonus. So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And quite frankly, the wake-up package is what it's called. If you get that and you get all these bonuses, you're getting the wake-up package for just $47 right now. I mean, you couldn't get a half an hour of Karen's time for that. So it's really a great deal, and I invite you to take advantage of that. In addition, you'll get the recordings, like I said, to keep forever. Otherwise, still tune in and listen. It's free, and you'll have access to those. The summit ends on June 10th. You'll get access to the recordings for a period of 48 hours after. So after June 12th, they'll be pulled down if you haven't purchased. But that still should give you time to check it out, see if you like it. And it's guaranteed, too, by the way. If you do purchase the Wake Up Package, 30 days later you decided it wasn't everything it was cracked up to be, it wasn't worth $47, I doubt you're going to think that. But if you do, we'll give you your money back and you still get to keep everything.
That sounds great. And, Michael, I'm really honored to be a part of it, and I'm looking forward to tuning in. So it starts on Friday, June 3rd, and goes until June 10th. Terrific. Yeah. Michael, thank you for joining me. And I look forward to learning more and speaking with you in the future. And see you at the Conscious Life Summit.
It's been my pleasure, Karen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, we have a few minutes left. That was Michael Neely of the Conscious Life Summit 2016. And looking forward to that. There are lots of interesting summits these days online. It's a beautiful place to be here in cyberspace, isn't it? Where we get to hang around with people we like and talk about things that we like to talk about or learn about. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, next week, I'm really looking forward to my guest, Jonathan Balcombe. He's been on the program before, and he has a new book out called What a Fish Knows. I'm going to read it before next Tuesday. I haven't started, but I'm really looking forward to it. There's some really fascinating things about fish that we just can't even imagine, because it's almost like they live on another planet, you know, living on the Earth in an atmosphere of air versus living in an atmosphere of salty water or fresh water is very, very different. It's like another planet. And we can't imagine that these living beings can feel, have senses, can experience pain, and have emotion and intelligence. And just as we were talking about with Michael, this being conscious, we have no understanding of this. We're not conscious about other beings, especially those who live in the water, and what the possibilities are. And I'm always frustrated, because I think if we were more open to it, we could learn so much to make our own lives that much better. Okay. So, just in review, you have some great vegan seafood to try out from Sophie's Vegan Kitchen, and you can join me just in a few days at the Conscious Life Summit. Meanwhile, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. I am Karen Hartglass, and remember, have a very delicious week.